Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is the Distraction Pieces podcast, episode 562. And I'm joined today by just one of my best pals in the world, one of my favourite humans. There's a funny bit at the end of this episode where I tell B I love him, and then immediately I stumble and say the name of his new album wrong. So we kind of have to focus on addressing that rather than being big manly men expressing our love for each other. So that's something to look forward to. B Dolan, if you're not familiar, is one of my favourite rappers, also happens to be one of my favourite people. Been on the podcast multiple times, but always is just doing good shit. B, during the pandemic, had to, out of nowhere, have emergency full spine surgery. So we did an episode about that, but that was a few years back. You know, that was 3 years ago. Since then, B's returned to touring. B's written, in my opinion, the best album he's ever written. Been doing a lot of shit, and we talk about all of that. And we talk about evolving as humans. We talk about keeping each other in check as friends. And we talk about yoga, man. We talk about yoga, and it gets deep. Honestly, you're probably thinking, why do I want to hear these dudes talk about yoga? You'll be surprised. In fact, I'm going to get Buddy Peace. Buddy Peace puts all the links in the description and things like that of the actual podcast. So there will be a pre-order link to B's amazing new album, The Wound Is Not the Body, which I say wrong at the end. But we'll also put a link to the yoga studio that B talks about being a life changer for him, Roots Speciality. It's Instagram.com. It's Roots Speciality on Instagram. But as they're in America and a lot of you guys are in England, I'm also going to put a link to a yoga page that I think is dope, that's in the UK, that's Norfolk-based centered spirit.yoga. So this is the first time that we're going to have multiple yoga links in the description, and I'm all about it, man. But we're also going to have all sorts of other links. And speaking of links, link your way over to speechdevelopmentrecords.com, where you can get all the merch, all the goodness, all the wonderful stuff. Patreon.com/ScroobiusPip is where you can support the podcast for $1 a month. I'm thinking of putting it up to $2 a month, because times are tough, man. And the podcast is, I'll be honest, some months it's been running at a loss. A lot of you will know I've turned down some sponsorships of late because I couldn't morally get on board with them. I think we talked about that in the drunk cast. So times are a little bit tighter. So yeah, if you're listening and you're on the Patreon, maybe I'll put a little question up there. I'm trying to be more active in there, because if $2 a month isn't going to make a difference to you compared to $1 a month, then obviously it'd double what I'm getting from Patreon, because over the hundreds of people in there, you know. I don't know. I'm thinking out loud here. I should shut up and get on with it. You can also see me thinking out loud a lot over on twitch.tv/ScroobiusPipyo. I've been having some fun over there of late. So yeah, head over there. It's all free. I love when people come over there who aren't gamers or don't know what Twitch is, because they all seem to turn up and be like, "All right, so we're just hanging out with you and chatting, and we can ask questions and interact and engage, and it's just this casual, relaxed thing, and there's DJ sets and music streams and all sorts of other stuff." But yeah, that's what's going on. Yeah, that's all I need to tell you. Let's get into the conversation. It's a good one. It's one of my favourite conversations I've had this year. B is always part of the favourite conversations I have in any given year, whether they're recorded or not. So it's been dope having B become part of the Twitch community and us hanging out a lot and doing a lot of stuff over there. We touch upon that. We don't go crazy into it, but, you know, we get into this stuff. Yeah, that's cool. Let's go. Let's get into it. This is the Distraction Pieces podcast. What number did I say it is? Episode 562 with B Dolan. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. But are you rolling?
Rolling.
Well, we are live, and I'm joined today by multi-time guest and just one of my best friends in the world, Mr. B Dolan. How you doing, man?
Chilling, man. How are you?
I'm good.
You look tan.
I'm good. Am I looking tan? I stayed out of the sun a fair bit, but, you know.
Cheeks are rosy.
That's probably just more through stress and exhaustion. Bad lifestyle choices, but I'll take it. I'll take the compliment. I mean, we're going to be going through a lot of lifestyle choices in this conversation. Because okay.
There's so many to make.
We've kind of slung this together a bit last minute, but you were saying, like, you've been on multiple times. Have we got anything else to talk about? But man, a lot has happened since the last time you were on.
Yeah, life's gone down. Yeah.
You've written at least one album.
Yeah.
Possibly multiple albums.
Definitely you've multiple.
Toured for the first time since having full spine surgery. You've had loads of adjustments in your life in general because of spine surgery. Twitch has become a more prevalent thing. You were already doing things there, but it's got a bit bigger. I want to talk about all of that. I want to talk about uncledom, because that's become a bigger and bigger part of your life as each year
really
goes
has.
By, it feels like. So
yep.
There's loads I want to get into, but can we kind of start with, because last time we spoke, you had just had surgery and were kind of recovering. I was in Vancouver. You were at home.
Learning to walk again.
But learning it all again. Can we kind of, it sounds kind of heavy, but can we talk about the real changes there? Because there is an adjustment of, I mean, we'll talk about it more on touring, but you've had to adjust to how your body is now, what your body is now. I mean, that's going to come up a lot because it's key to your new album, I think. It's key to everything. But how's that all been? And what's been the change in mindset and change in, you know, the day-to-day, the physical day-to-day?
Oh, it's been a complete 180, really, from the how I was living in the first half of my life. So yeah. it's really ongoing. And in that sense, it still feels pretty new. But I think about it a lot. It's become sort of a whole nother workload to try and rewire circuitry in my brain and the way I react to things. And I've become so much aware of how my emotions are connected to my physicality and how not managing my emotions will now become an immediate physical problem, where I think before it was like a low-key back burner simmering physical problem.
Yeah.
You know, I feel the damage immediately now. I'm like, oh, I know I could, you know, feel what emotion did it sometimes, which is interesting.
I think that's really interesting because, again, there can be a lot of stuff that you'll read that sounds quite hippie or airy-fairy when you're saying how much emotions and our mental health or whatever are attached to our body. The body keeps the score and all this kind of thing, which became very popular terms and popular kind of phraseology. But you've had to learn directly because of the surgery you went through and everything you went through with your spine, that you feel the difference if you're tense or if you're angry, or on a more basic level, you've always been a big dude and big dudes get in big dude situations kind of thing. So where you may have previously, whether that be reacting angrily or in defense, or whether that be, I'll get this and move this stuff, and rather than go through it logically and rationally, I'll just get shit done.
Yeah.
All of that is a change in mentality, right? Because it's not, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it feels like all a change for the positive. Like if these changes hadn't been forced, if these changes had happened earlier in your life, they might not have been forced as such. Does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'm in that sense, I'm definitely grateful for the journey of
not
it all.
Not to try and romanticize
hugely real.
Traumatic
it's real. I mean,
stuff you've been through. It's all for the best, man. It's been good.
Yeah, nah. No, but I mean, you know me well enough to know that I've never really been like one who's like feels entitled to an idyllic life.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sort of like in for the ride, whatever the fuck happens. You know, and there's been incredible highs, and I've you know, gotten to do things that people dream of doing. And there's been moments of fucking exquisite pain that I just can't even describe with all my ability. And all of it has been like educational, including the really ill parts of recovery and this. And yeah, I mean, who I am now is definitely probably objectively a more evolved human being than the one that was walking around for the first half of my life. I was trying. I was you know, I did good work, but I was injuring myself. Like I'm a big fan of Marvin Gaye's, you know. He's got a song called Anger that I listen to so much. And there's a breakdown where he says, like, I don't want to be feeling bad up and down my back, my spine. It injures me. And that's wow. the hook. And I was listening to that so much in the hospital, shit like that. So it's, you know, it's not new age. It's, you know, you can feel it in your own body when you're tense and your shoulders start to rise up by your ears. And when you're in a position where you fear being attacked or you don't feel safe, that changes how you hold yourself, how you carry yourself. And you bring that shit forward into your life. Then you're just a person walking around. And someone goes, have you checked in with your jaw recently? And you're like, oh shit, it's fucking locked tight. And yeah, you know, over time you start to feel it.
Yeah, yeah. And again, I think it's one of the things I've always connected with you on and loved about you is that ability to constantly self-analyze and self-assess, you know, through good and bad. And it's going to sound like a weird comparison, but we've talked about it. I had a big breakup last year. And one of the beautiful things I found was going, I feel I'm a better person coming out of this than I was going into it. And that's a dope thing. That's a positive thing, regardless of anything else. I feel I can look at what I've become more aware of, what I've become more attuned to. And that's a positive. And it feels like there's a similar thing here that some of, and we discussed this on the last one, but some of the books that you read and some of the tapes that you listened to during your surgery would have benefited you, surgery or not, you know, so, but they wouldn't have come to you, surgery or not. So it's that beautiful thing of acknowledging and accepting that we're meant to be evolving rather than, you know, staying who we were or how we were and accepting the change that's out of our control, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, and in some ways, it's just like a very interesting puzzle to adapt to. It's like, oh, this is, we're doing this? Well, shit, okay. I guess we're going to have to develop lots of new skills and everything's going to be different. So I'm not bored. Yeah. I haven't been bored.
I mean, it's all kind of intertwined and it's hard to have any structure to this conversation because I want to talk about the writing of the new record. And there's numerous themes. It's not all about the things that you've been through. It's layered as B Dolan records always are. But I also want to talk about touring and those things for me kind of come hand in hand, having seen you at the Fringe and then at different points along the tour where you were trying out this new material as you were seeing what touring is now for you, what your body can handle, what your live show is.
Yeah.
And if it's all viable. So kind of talk to me a little bit about, I guess, starting at the beginning then, the decision to get back on the road and how easy a decision that was, how heavy a decision was it? Easy at first because that's what you've always done and then you've got to deal with the actual reality of it. How did that all come about and how did that feel?
Yeah, it was heavy at first and I think that came with just post-COVID. Post-COVID is feelings were kind of magnified for me by being also post-surgery feelings. So I definitely had this sort of like isolated perspective of who the hell knows if anyone's even out there or it's even possible, or, you know, we've just been through the wildest time as a live music industry when everything just got totally shut down. And we never, you know, I don't think a lot of us conceived before that could happen like that. Like that all, it would just be over for touring for, you know, however long it was for people in their various situations. A lot of bands never came back from that. A lot of venues never came back from that. So I was watching all that happen and being like, what's going to be out there? So there was that trepidation. Then there was the physical trepidation of just like, am I going to wake up one morning locked up in a way that I can't, you know, get out of a bed or something? I haven't tried to do touring, the physicality of touring since surgery. And what's that going to be like? And that turned out to be actually better, like much better than anticipated. Right. And my worries about the crowds also kind of evaporated as I went place to place. I mean, the Fringe was an example where we went back and we're like, I don't know if this is the same post-COVID for us. And I don't know if this is going to be the move. So there have been changes. There have been places that have had up and downs. But by and large, the response was hugely positive. And physically, it felt good. I was doing 2-hour sets every night by the end of the tour.
Yeah.
Just to see if I could and feeling good.
Why do you think it physically felt good? Was it because of changes that you'd made to how you're doing it, how you're touring, how you're looking after yourself on the road? Or was it simply your body could take more than you'd possibly anticipated, or at least, you know, as much as you'd hoped?
Yeah, it was a lot of factors. And that was part of the rebuilding after surgery was PT or physio followed by yoga, which I've been doing since the surgery. And that gave me more of a physical foundation, I felt like, in just my kind of movements on stage and movements off stage and carrying myself. That's helped. And also, obviously, I'm just like, I'm not moving boxes like I used to. I'm not moving gear like I used to. I can't do any of that shit. It's just a no. So having it be off the table for me just means I'm not injuring myself with that stuff. And then
it's good to have that as a flat no, rather than a, I'd rather not, but shit, we need to get this done. It's like, no, I physically, this isn't an option for me.
Yeah. So there's that. And yeah, in general, it was easier and it felt better. And it was sort of returning to myself because I sort of have two physical practices on and off tour. Off tour, I'm in a studio, I'm at a desk, I'm writing, I'm, you know. On tour, I'm walking around doing 2-hour sets every night, you know, checking out cities. It's more physical. And I like that part about it. And I've always liked that part about it. So it was cool to be able to take a fucking 10-mile walk around Edinburgh and try and link up with you while you tried to strategically lose me at every single hill. So I would have to go uphill to find you at the next venue you were at.
I was going to say, with hindsight, maybe Edinburgh wasn't the perfect starting point for someone figuring out how they're going to tour again. Because Edinburgh always involves a lot of walking. Edinburgh, when I'm involved, involves so much more walking.
100,000 steps, first week back.
Yeah, yeah. That was kind of a birth of fire, wasn't it? To get straight in.
In my head, in my memory, I was like, Edinburgh is so easy. It's just, you know, you're in the same city every day. You don't have to move. And then I got back there. I was like, oh yeah, it's all uphill, cobblestone, five miles away from where you need to be.
It's a cliche to say it now, but it's the only city where you can walk somewhere uphill and somehow walk back uphill as well. It doesn't make any sense. It's some MC Escher shit that's just not that's just not on. I don't know who invented that place, but it's a beautiful city. But yeah, maybe it's not the one.
Shout to the bruh.
Before we move on and continue on tour stuff and album stuff, I don't think there's that many conversations out there between rappers, even if one of them's a former rapper, that gets really deep into yoga. So let's go there. Talk to me about yoga, because it's a key thing. It's on the album. It's part of the album as well.
Made the album
in a mad way.
Yeah.
Talk to me about how much that's changed your life and how. Again, it's weird with stuff like that. Meditation, yoga, all types of things. I think almost everyone now will say some kind of, I know I should, but maybe I don't. Yeah, I know it's good for me, but maybe I don't. But you've, again, been kind of forced into something that's, I think, positive for mind and body for you. And again, this is speaking to someone who I know I should, but I don't. So,
yeah, I mean, I never really had any like physical practice like that. I mean, I played sports when I was younger and then I started writing and then I dropped out of school and then I started touring. So like there was never any karate or gymnastics or shit like that. We just played fucking basketball. Then we played football, and we just beat the shit out of each other no matter what we were doing physically, athletically. And touring was then 15 years of beating the shit out of each other artistically. And then, you know, you like wake up in a hospital bed, and the yoga shit to me, obviously I have feelings about white people appropriating culture, Pip. I don't know if you know that about me, but so yoga was never anything.
A lot
that
of
really,
feelings.
The culture around yoga.
And correct feelings.
Yeah. You know, like a lot of that shit just, you know, from a distance put me off and was like, this is not something that I care about.
I've not talked to you about my Sweat Lodge trip, and that's because I also have complex feelings about white people appropriating culture.
You know, and for that reason, it's like, what kind of community am I walking into? If I walk into a place like this, you know, like, is someone going to fucking try and sell me crystals? Is someone going to try and, you know, like, I'm not on some new age shit. Like, and like you said, like when we started talking about the body and emotions earlier, you were saying like, you know, it is easy to think, you know, like it feels new age the second you start hearing about it or talking about it. Like you kind of feel yourself like glazing over and being like, oh God, this shit. Like,
yeah.
But my physical therapy journey was one where I got misdiagnosed and mistreated for 9 months with this neck shit before I got the MRI that said you need immediate surgery. And for 3 to 5 years, you've been at risk of neck down paralysis. So I had left a bad PT or physio experience. And the one physical therapist I had met there was Dr. Amy Smith. She had started her own practice since I had seen her last. So when I came out of surgery, it was like this, I had to pay out of pocket. It wasn't in my insurance network. I was fortunate enough to be able to do so. So I was under her treatment through my recovery because I trusted her. She was the one PT I ever met who like really diagnosed the structural shit I had going on with my posture, which is a genetic thing that goes back to like childhood. I have a young nephew now who is the same way. And so she talked to me in a way that made sense. I asked lots of questions. She answered me in a like intelligent on the level way. I had curiosity about the shit because it's like, this is my fucking body, you know, like I'm now in a situation where like, I can't feel the left three fingers on my hand. Like, what are we doing? You know, this can't worsen. I got to like diagnose and get on top of this shit. How do we fix this? And so I went past the recovery period with her in treatment. I didn't have to be in PT. You know, I'm still in PT. I have a PT appointment today, but I've stayed current with her because she sees the ways that I sort of injure myself over time when I don't have good habits. And she can kind of address that on a muscular level when I fuck something up.
Yeah.
But in terms of how are you going to stop re-injuring yourself, I had to really like kind of rebuild my whole posture from the ground up, literally feet, knees, thighs, pelvic floor. Core, you know, like, so I've had to become curious about all this shit because it just wasn't anything I gave a fuck about for the first half of my life. And and you realize when you're on the other side of some like body changing shit, it's like, oh, I only have one of these. And like now I'm at the age where all that shit I did in the first half when I was convinced I was immortal or I was going to die by 27 or I was going to die I haven't died. I didn't die. I'm alive. Like, fuck. So now, like, how do we keep this, you know, this machine functioning so we can keep doing the things like we love to do?
Again, I love that kind of, it highlights that old mentality of, and whether it be smoking or drinking or eating bad or whatever, when people say, I'd rather enjoy my time here. You know, I'd rather enjoy my time here and be here a short amount of time. It's like, oh no, you're going to be here a long as fuck time and you're going to stop enjoying it because of what you've done to your body.
Exactly.
It's like, it's not as simple as eat badly and you'll die a bit younger. It's eat badly and you'll have a good portion of your life that's unpleasant or whatever. Shit. I'm using eat badly as an example, but all of that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it catches up.
Yeah.
And it's just like life skill shit too. As you learn about it, you're like, oh man, like everyone should be taught this shit instead of the bullshit that, you know, like my young nephews, again, like have some of the same problems. And we're looking at him like, what are we going to do? Are we going to put him in gymnastics or karate or something? Like we have to, you know, we're trying to address that in a kid, but for our generation, like no one ever looked at me. It was like, you know, you're standing wrong. Your posture's fucked up.
Yeah.
And so unless you have some discipline like that or some practice like that. Yeah. So whatever the fuck it is, it doesn't have to be yoga, you know?
Yeah.
It's just been yoga for me because my physio happens to be a yoga teacher and advocate it. And so I knew that I could literally be in a yoga class with the person who knows my spine best. So she's not going to put me in any situation that's fucked up. And she's coming at it from a therapeutic perspective and treating people who have all sorts of, you know, modified needs within yoga. So they change positions up and yeah, it's been beneficial. It's odd. It's weird. But just those like 90 minutes with yourself and your body in concentrated awareness, trying to do some shit it's time to like let your body talk to you and like pay attention, be like, oh, this arm is fucked up or to be impressed and go like, oh, damn, I can do a fucking plank that long. Like, all right, that's pretty good. You know, like that stuff has been an important part of like connecting with the new body, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I love it. I love how prioritized and how set in stone it is as well. Because, get into independent artist shit, but independent artist shit tends to lead you towards the idea that nothing is more important than work, and that can be health, that can be family, that can be friends, all of these things. And there's been a few times that we've tried to set shit up, whether it be stream stuff or meetings or whatever else. And you've been like, no, man, I've got yoga. And there's the initial, well, fuck yoga, man. This is important. And then there's the, I fucking love how settings, how it's not even an option. It's like, no, man, I'm at yoga.
It's the best part of my week, man. This isn't happening. I get to just fucking breathe for 90 minutes. Like, it's so good. And also, like, I mean, the first half of my life, I probably, you know, I might have tried it and hated it in the first half of my life. But now I'm like, ah, this is fucking, this is the best. I'll pay good money for this. Just let me breathe in a room and where my phone is in the other room, you know?
Yeah, yeah, that's a key part. Well, speaking of paying good money, I want to make a point here that your new album, The Wound Is Not the Body, is out, is available for pre-order now.
Yeah.
And mate, I think it's astounding. And I love how the way you've approached it all, because it's kind of confirmed as astounding because of how you've kind of workshopped it via Patreon and Twitch and stuff like that. It's like people have, you've brought your audience along on the journey. So you're not just coming out of the woods with a record going, is this good? You're coming out with kind of confirmation, at least some kind of confirmation that this is dope as fuck. And I guess talk to me a little bit about the process of writing it and the process of being really open. And I guess this is a wider conversation about the changes in the industry and adapting, because I think it's really interesting having to adapt to the changes in the industry whilst also acknowledging that you're not a 19-year-old kid. So you're not necessarily going to go, well, it's all on TikTok now. That is what it is. You're going, look, it is, and I respect that, but I'm not that. Yeah. Therefore, here's how I have to do it. So talk to me a bit about that.
Yeah, that was, I had a conversation pre-pandemic, I think it was back when we were doing the Epic Beardman records, with someone who was talking to me about basically the broad strokes of like what this type of transparency could look like for an artist. And that's what they were telling me. They were telling me basically that like new artists starting now are giving more access to their fans. Their fans get to see them like in the studio while they're recording songs. And and immediately I was like, no. Absolutely not. Horrible idea. Not doing that.
Awful to me.
Yeah. And I still haven't. That you know, like that's why it's a la carte. There's so many options. There's so many platforms.
Yeah.
But I was urged to just like bring people more into it. And it made sense a little bit in the sense that I think the old music industry model sort of conditioned everybody for a long time to be like, you know, the artist just goes away and comes back with this masterpiece. And, you know, you might not even get a Beyonce tweet for 5 years in between albums or something, which is fine when you have like a massive money marketing machine behind you. But for independent artists and artists trying to grow their fan base, it was like, you need to tell people more of the story. You need to share more of yourself with people. You need to let them actually understand what's behind all this, bring them into your process. And the pandemic shutting down live music sort of forced my hand to quickly really, really try that. and maybe, you know, who knows, maybe I would have had my foot half on the pedal otherwise, but as was, I had to just like floor it as soon as touring stopped. So we had a Discord early. We were on Twitch early. We were doing fucking shows in Minecraft during lockdown. And over time, these names just became more and more familiar. They signed up for Patreon. They hung around for movie night. They had conversations with each other and became a community. And then we kind of linked up with y'all on Twitch when y'all were already in like phase three of that also.
That's one of the interesting things, and we'll get onto that more in Twitch, but there'll be a fair few people who don't know that, like from our Twitch community, who don't know that you were on Twitch long before I was. Like, we talked about Twitch on the last episode during the pandemic because you were already doing, we were already doing the Minecraft thing then. But your appearance in kind of my half of the side of the community was a down the line thing. So we'll get into your progression on Twitch in general. But completely. More and more people started to appear and rally
around. Over time, I've become more comfortable with it. I've definitely become more comfortable with sharing more. And streaming in general, I think, as a way of performing or whatever you want to call streaming, it definitely broke down some walls of, needing to perfect content or not being able to show a work in progress or something that's not polished.
Mate, it's been amazing to see. Like there would be things like you'd announce a stream that you're going to be playing a load of demos and I'd be like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, why is this happening? This seems insane. And again, I noticed myself then kind of nodding along and smiling in agreement with complete awareness that like, you know, I'm never going to release music again. But if I did, it's totally appearing out of nowhere. And I'm not doing any of this stuff that I completely agree is the way to do it. But right, I know if I was to, it'd appear I'd Kaiser Soze, I'd vanish again afterwards. Yeah. You'd be like, there were clues all along.
it's somewhere on YouTube under a false name.
Again, yeah, exactly. It'll do no business. It'll be an absolute flop. But again, I love that it shows me how inspirational it is that you've taken these steps and got to where you are. Because I'm listening and agreeing that this is clear. This has been amazing. It's the way to go. But still thinking, I could not do, at this point in my mind, I could not do this. So yeah, it's dope to watch that development and evolution.
Yeah, over time too, like our process got better and more suited to that on its own. And when I say that, I'm talking about like DS3K, who I work remotely with, who mixes all my stuff. Mm-hmm. We've been working together since House of Bees Volume 2, where we were kind of putting together various mixes from Buddy Peace and other producers and those parts. Then... And Kill the Wolf was our first record that we really like recorded everything and then mixed it. And we're figuring out, I was figuring out how to do production and then pass it to him. We were figuring out our studio workflow and how all that stuff was going to work.
I love that if anyone skipped it in the intro that I always do, but this is going to be the first ever. And you can head to speechdevelopmentrecords.com to buy Kill the Wolf.
Oh, shit.
And,
that's right. Yeah.
Okay. Enjoy yourself there.
Yeah, so Kill the Wolf, like we were, that was our first album that we like really start to finish kind of produced. And Epic Beardman, we did a bunch of work. And then the pandemic hit and we could no longer meet for our weekly meetups. But I had kind of become so good at giving him exactly what he needed and getting the beats to exactly where they needed to be before they go to him, that my production was a little more listenable. And then it also changed the way I make demos. It made me make a demo that I knew somebody was going to immediately hear who likes my music. So where before that might have been like a one verse little hook, little you know, nonsense jazz lead line second verse. Now it was like, write the second verse, do it now. You know, it made my studio discipline more accountable, if that makes sense. So my demos got better. And then at a certain point, I was sending the demos to like Small Professor and he was like, yo, this is a fucking demo. This song sounds done. Like, what, you know, so it was all good. Like good things came of it. It made me more accountable to the people who like my music the most, which is like obviously the audience that's going to get you the most hype with their responses too, you know, and who knows, maybe it'll come out and people will be like, his fans gassed him up. He made a fucking trash album, you know.
I don't think so at all. But I mean, how are you finding, again, the modern parts of the music industry that do work for you? Like The Wound Is Not the Body got front page coverage on Bandcamp because the hype was there because of all this kind of pre-build you've done. And again, whilst you might not want to be doing dances on TikTok, you are perfectly in the range of people whose music is going to be discussed by other grown men on YouTube and shit like this kind of thing, which is again a new thing in the industry from when we started off in it.
Reaction videos,
and shit like that's important. So you're already having like bits of that kind of come about of people reacting, and you seem to have a good level of embracing there. When you've talked about it on Twitch, for example, you're not simply check out this person saying how great I am, but then you're also not going, fuck this. It's the right balance of discomfort and embracing and analysis of the analysis.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that part has been fun for people to watch. So yeah, we released the single and then someone did a reaction video. And this has happened one other time before too, where someone was doing, a YouTuber was doing reaction videos to my videos. And then I was able to pull up their reaction video and react to the reaction. And I think that's cool. Like we were watching it on stream the other day and it was fun. And the first video he watched, he was like, his mind was blown. He was like, who is this fucking guy? And I got and it's fun to watch someone have that reaction. I've actually gone back and watched it a couple times. I'm not going to lie. Like, it's watching someone's face when the beat drops is satisfying and cool. And that's never happened before.
It's the digital version of the Buzz Live, right? The Buzz would always be like, you'll be doing a tour. But the reason, like, again, as an audience member, I'd always be like, oh, why the fuck are they playing a new song?
Yeah.
As a performer, I know that it's for that buzz that when this new song, the beat or whatever else does to them what it does to you, it's that excitement. Like you know that when you heard this beat or when you nailed this line or whatever, you were like, oh, fuck, this is good. And it's watching that in a crowd. That's that's the reason we're more excited to play new songs than play the hits as such, because it's finding that again. And this is the kind of digital version of that, of I know that it's stuff that you would have been like, as like either when the beat came through or when you put it together or when you and DSK had like a breakthrough or things like that. It'd be have that moment. It's to see someone else get that and go, that's the shit I'm talking about.
And it's fun because others get to now see that happen too and talk about it. But the funny part is afterwards, people were hitting me up and were like, you must be, you know, so buzzed. You must be so. And I was like, and that part was interesting. And people, I think, were sort of puzzled by how I wasn't actually like, I wasn't as hype as the person listening to the music was, maybe. Mm-hmm. And then a couple days later, they did another reaction video to a political song of mine, and they disagreed with the political message a little bit. And I watched people in our community have a reaction to that. I was like, well, now. Now you see. You see why I can't. I don't go all the way up and I don't go all the way down.
Because I can't. Yeah.
And this stuff sort of lives apart from me now. Like, it's people, it takes on its own meaning for people. It lives its own life.
Live illustration of someone who's experienced in not taking reviews too seriously, because they're either going to gash you up too much or they're going to hit you too hard when, and social media in general. I love that shit. Well, I mean, I want to talk a little bit about your kind of evolution on Twitch and finding what you enjoy doing on there, because I think that has been really interesting. And there will be people who are listening who are going, I don't know what Twitch is. I don't understand Twitch. And I always want to say, I've said this to mates who hit me up on Instagram and say that. And I'm like, you're on Instagram, so you can figure out Twitch. Like, it's just another app. It's not this unimaginable thing. And equally, if you're listening to a podcast, there was 100% a point you said, I don't really know what a podcast is.
Yeah.
And now you're listening to one and it's fine. Nothing big changed in your life.
Don't be scared.
And it's the same with Twitch. It's just another app. It's another place for content, I guess. But your kind of evolution on there has been interesting because of time zones. I used to catch you every now and then, but not often. I wasn't a big Twitch watcher anyway. And what I'd generally catch would be you playing records. You'd have a mic plugged in, but you wouldn't necessarily be chatting that much. You might respond to something every now and then. Was that your starting point?
That and Minecraft, and maybe a few just chatting type streams, and we would watch movies in Discord. That was the original round of stuff.
And then that's kind of evolved, because I came on and I was playing more computer games on there, but then again, I've done more kind of music-based or kind of feels like a little indie talk show or TV show or something inspired by your stuff and other people's stuff, a guy 1030 and other people who are in our community. So how was that kind of evolution to kind of going, right, I'm now going to start using Twitch for what Twitch was intended for? Like, I'm going to play, because even the Minecraft stuff, you were building and putting on shows rather than necessarily, I'm going to sit here and play Minecraft for several hours and enjoy it kind of thing.
Yeah, I think, Twitch was another one where it was like, we set it up around the Epic Beardman time, but we literally had no idea what to do with it. It was just a placeholder page. We were trying to upload our music videos to Twitch and we were just like, why do they keep getting copyright striked? This platform doesn't make any sense. So that was the genesis of Twitch. I don't know when my Twitch account was created.
And again, I will add, it is confusing at first. Although I've said everyone can get on board with it. I know there's a certain...
As a creator, it's...
When I started streaming, I got a load of... Or I say a load, two or three people kind of backlash because they all thought I hated Twitch and looked down on Twitch. And I only figured out months later that it's because when I'd go on Dan Lesak's Twitch, I'd be confused.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, shit. I don't know what's happening. And I'd compare it to Cam Girls. And I realized that was, in their mind, I was being...
You're dissing
a derogatory. What you know of me as a person is I support sex workers and sex work. That's not the derogatory at all. The reason I compared it to cam girls was it was a familiar comparison to me.
Exactly.
I have paid money to watch girls take their clothes off. Like, I know what that shit is. I'm not here saying, I'm not talking down to you. I'm telling you, I know cam girls. I've been on those sites. Like, I've no shame in that. So it was the comparison. It was the logical comparison. But I realized that people at first thought I was saying, so basically you're a fucking cam girl, as if that's a bad thing.
Yeah. No, you were just trying to get your bearings. You were just like, oh, I'm
getting
a cam
my
girl.
Bearings, okay, man. Right. I'm trying to figure out it. So people could give you money if they're enjoying it.
Exactly.
Okay, cool. Or they can subscribe. Cool. Yeah, this makes sense to me.
Yep.
But yeah, so that was, again, there will be a level of understanding and a learning curve, because you jump in and the emotes and the sound alerts and all that shit, the first time you're in there, you're like,
dinks.
What the hell is this shit? But
it
makes sense as it goes along. It's not that scary.
I mean, especially if you're into games. But when the pandemic happened, a lot of music people hopped on Twitch, and it was a great time for fucking DJs. Lockdown was a great time for DJs on Twitch, man. I saw so many fucking great DJ sets on Twitch.
Who's the guy I followed off the back of you? Someone's house. Someone.
Oh, house. Is it House Shoes? House Shoes.
That's it. House Shoes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He plays good a lot shit. Of like,
again, it's
breaks.
Just pretty chilled hip hop DJ sets that just, really, they dig deep. Yeah. Yeah. It's good shit.
Yeah. That's the stuff I have around. I also started like digitizing my vinyl during the pandemic. So I was deep in the crates kind of, and that was me. That was sort of also me just being like, how can I share the process with people? Because that was the time when I was like scouring samples for this album. And so I was like, well, I can do that in a DJ kind of way if I'm just, and that's why the Beat Dolan is not a DJ thing developed, because it was like, don't take it like I'm a DJ here, but I am going to be looping up break records and fucking, it's a vibe here for the next 2 hours. Yeah. And a lot of those like records I was playing with did end up getting chopped up in the album. So like it was part of the process in that way. But yeah, then I was playing Minecraft with my nephew just to hang out with him, because we couldn't physically hang out. So the Minecraft thing, it just happened that I got back into Twitch and back into games, period, for the first times since like, my early 20s, I guess. Final Fantasy X was the game I played, and then was like, this was great. I put thousands of hours into this. If I want to make anything of my life, I have to stop this completely. And then, you know, fucking 20 years later, trying to connect with my little nephew, and he's like in Minecraft all the time. And it's like, all right, what is this? And my fucking mind has been blown ever since by the games that are out. So those two things have kind of like happened together, where it was like I sort of got pulled more into playing more games, started watching more Twitch. And then from watching more Twitch, you see what other people are presenting. You're like, oh, this is really cool. Oh, damn, I never even thought of something like this. Or like you see other people doing it well.
It's exactly that, isn't it? You kind of, when you're not in it, you just, it's the same with when people would say, oh, Instagram is just people posting pictures of their food.
Right.
Remember those early days of Instagram? Because that's what that is. I've got no interest in posting pictures of my food. It's like, oh, it doesn't have to be that. And it's similar with Twitch. Oh, Twitch is just people playing computer games. I've no interest in that. Cool. It doesn't have to be that. And sometimes it can be that. And that can be a lot more fun than you expected.
Yeah. Yeah. And games are fucking incredible. Like not being into games at this point is like not being into movies. It's like, okay, you don't have to be, but you're missing incredible culture that's happening.
Yeah. I always remember Dan saying to me that script-wise, games at points are taking bigger risks and making bigger leaps and jumps artistically and creatively than the film industry is at the moment, because it's a bigger industry financially than the film industry, but they spend a lot less. So it's kind of, it's easier to take these risks on these independent games and doing creative stuff than it is like an independent film will still need like a million, whereas an independent game might not. So, yeah, you know, you can play about a lot more.
Did we just start a game company?
I think we did, yeah. Exciting times. But yeah, so you started playing more. I need to put a little section in to things that we've started doing on there and not finished. So, and deciding which ones we do need to go back to. So we did a thing called Rhyme and Punishment on mine, which was us playing a game called PUBG and attempting to freestyle the whole time.
Yeah.
I don't think we need to go back to that one. I think that one...
Well, I was going to say, should we start a poll in the chat?
Yeah, let's start a poll in the chat. But the one we do need to go back to, and I wanted to mention here because I think people should go and... Because again, people don't realise as well, you can go back and watch all of these different things. But we did one episode, and it's fairly recent. It's not like it's been abandoned massively. Yeah. But of one called Pip and B Show Each Other Stuff. And it was... The subject we picked was late night TV show music performances. And it's just us...
Yeah,
we brought three or four to the table each, just going, have a look at this one. And it's us just talking about it and reacting and pausing and getting into it.
Yeah.
And that was dope. And I think we're going to do more. We're going to do sketch comedy or various different things, because it's just basically it's playing on the cultural differences across the pond and so on and so forth from two people born in the same year but in different parts of the world, to kind of go, you've probably never heard of Limmy. Obviously, you have because of Twitch, but things like that, that when you first came onto Twitch and found Lemmy, you weren't aware of his stuff because it didn't particularly make it to America. And there's, it's finding things like that. So number one, people should go and watch the first episode of that. And number two, we should definitely do a second and third and so on and so forth.
You don't want to do more Rhyme and Punishment? You don't want to do more freestyle PUBG?
That was a funny one for me to set up, because you know that I don't freestyle.
Yeah.
And you spent years on tour going, you've got to start freestyling. Like, let's practice. And I was always like, I have no interest whatsoever in freestyling. So to hit you up and say, shall we do a freestyle stream?
I'm ready now.
I like the idea of you just getting that message and going, well, this is weird, but it's kind of my dream come true. So yeah.
Are we about to get open?
And then a start in it and me not having any freestyle ability at all.
Bars.
Just like, nope, over to you, B. Zero bars from me. So those are worth going and looking at just for historical reference.
That's where the good bar emote came from.
Yeah.
We would tell each other we were done with our freestyle. Good bar.
Good bar. But all that joking aside, it was kind of an important thing, right? Because that tour you did, the first tour back from surgery, was... some of the most hyped gigs I've seen. And it's because it was a mixture of the crowd who've known you for years, who've met you through your solo tours, from touring with me and Dan, from touring with Sage, all sorts of other stuff, and a load of these new people who know you through Twitch, who get to suddenly go, oh shit, here's what B can do.
You rap.
Yeah. You rap also. And they were amazing crowds, right? It was really good tour.
Yeah, it was so awesome. It was really... It was to the point of being just confusing. Like, what's going on? What is this? I'm working on accepting love, Pip. in general, and it was bewildering. You know, to have just brand new people there. You know, like 15 years into this, like, who were down to like let me ship merch to their house, come work merch with us. You know, and then
shout out to Cade.
Yeah, shout out to Cade and Guspo. Or just were there to welcome me city to city. And we're also meeting up with each other. It was pretty magical. And then, the London show was fucking... Half the crowd felt like it was Twitch, because there was in the set, there was like a fucking Twitch joke. It was a Twitch exclusive little sound alert that people recognized. Yeah. And I got to watch like the left side of the room just like react, and the right side of the room just look at the left side of the room like, what the fuck? What's going on? What did we miss?
What just happened? You know? Have they just got a football result through on their phone? Or why is half the room losing their shit?
Yeah.
That was beautiful for me to watch, having, like, also there being people there I recognize from your shows previously and things like that, because I've been at a lot of shows over the years. So kind of that mixture of your hardcore crowd and this new crowd and, everything else.
Yeah.
A beautiful thing.
And two, I realized, like, the further I got into Twitch and the video game community, I knew this somewhat, but I really, really learned it in a new way post-pandemic, was that the Twitch and gaming community in general has a strong representation of queer folks and disabled folks, because these online spaces have traditionally been like a safe place to go express mm-hmm. identity, or to be together with people when you physically can't be together with people. So when I realized that, and that was around the Minecraft concerts, because so many disabled people at that time were like, this is incredible. I feel like I'm at a show again. This is, you know, and I saw the power of that. And, you know, that is what initially said, like, invest more time in this, go deeper into this. Like, this might be exactly where you've been trying to be your whole career. These, you know, and to see that then manifested in the audience that was present was so good also. You know, like, because hip hop can become very homogenous. It can be, especially in the channels that my music sometimes gets distributed through. Like, I'm an East Coast sounding, New York sounding rap dude. So that attracts straight dudes with beards, you know, and, you know,
hey,
like, yeah, you know, no disrespect. No, I, you know, some of my best friends are straight dudes with beards, but, you know, like, in terms of looking out the crowd and seeing a community represented that is really who I want to be there and who I want to be in community with, it was a huge come up, really.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's beautiful to see. The last two things I want to talk about kind of tie in together. And you know, on the Carter 3 at the end, where Wayne is rambling on and he goes, yeah, I'm gonna take my glasses off because I want to see the reaction when I say this next bit. I kind of feel that with this, because I want to talk about maneuvering in the modern world in industries that, you know, we're having to acknowledge and accept that there's been some bad people, maybe bad people that we've moved with or we've been close with or whatever else. Yeah. The example I'm going to give, again, I don't want to, this isn't a spill the tea drama scandal podcast, but the easy example I think I can give is Russell Brand, because you went on his show at points because of my introduction. He was the first guest on this podcast back in the day. Now, I can now talk about this, but you already know that I stopped associating with Russell a couple of years back because of stuff I'd heard and stuff I'd had confirmed from people that I trust and mean the world to me. And he's now had this big expose come out, which, again, people are going to get angry at this, but I thought it was amazing. I thought it was really, it was thorough. I don't believe it's a big conspiracy. I don't believe it's, you know, all this nonsense. But how do you find that? And the reason this kind of links into the other thing of unclehood or uncledom is because I think that plays into it at points of trying to be right. I need to move responsibly as a role model and as a person that's going to be passing on advice to young people, whether that be your own young people or an audience or whatever else. Have you found that? Because again, I want to talk about this because you're one of the people who I've talked about it to a lot privately, and I respect you understanding the nuance of it, that it isn't necessarily as simple as, oh, fuck that person.
Right.
It can be, yes, fuck that person, but here's how we fix that person or help that person.
Yeah.
You know, all different things.
Yeah.
I guess, how do you find it? I've rambled a lot there, but how are you finding it, man?
It's part of like our new reality also. Mm. It happened that a lot of that sort of stuff was coming to light around the same time of the pandemic and my surgery and stuff. So I'm bundling it all in the same midlife crisis. Why not? And on the other side of it, it's like, in the same way that I'm looking at myself and being like, what were the ways, even though I considered myself pretty evolved, even though I considered myself to be on the right side of things, what were the ways in which I was actually operating with a mindset of the enemy? And also, like, who is the enemy? Who are we going to say the enemy is? And how are we going to liberate ourselves from the enemy? I know I'm speaking in like abstract terms there, but all of us have been dealing with this shit in our lives for our whole lives. Like, when I really start to look at like trauma and the shit that causes us to fuck each other up, you know, to become abusers, to stay in abusive places, to accept abuse, like all of it is generational, has come down to us from parents and from even less enlightened, maybe fucking people than us. Like, when, you know, I'm a product of my parents that's trying to improve and not pass on damage that's been incurred to me. If that's the role of my life, then maybe that's, you know, fine. Because that's the type of shit that'll take you a lifetime to do and figure out. It's complicated.
For sure.
So then we get people who are just like in these positions where they're in power and they do fucking crazy shit with it. And it's like, well, we got to take that power away for sure. First of all, mm-hmm. you know, like, so, and that's why I'm down with fucking, you know, unfortunately, the shallow attempt to do that sort of backfires, as we've seen with Russell Brand, because if all we do is say, well, fuck you, block, goodbye, then we sort of haven't done anything to address the person. They haven't learned anything. And if anything, all that will happen is that they will double down and that they will be supported by people who are down with their abusiveness.
Yeah, and then they become,
and that's, I think, what's happened, right? He's just, he's kind of like just gone right wing now, and all the right wing people,
as far as I know,
huddle around people like Ye and fucking Donald Trump or whatever the fuck, or, you know, they will huddle around you and you can just become your own separate reality bubble. And at least, I mean, at least we can all look at you and know who you are then, if that's the type of shit you're on. But there's probably a middle ground of people who did bad shit, hurt people, but would love to know how to make it better or be back in community. Because I think, especially because we're often talking about dudes, a big part of what I have done is just investigate my own masculinity and read about it. There's a book called Masculinity and the Will to Change by Bell Hooks that I really recommend to dudes or anybody who's on the masculinity spectrum or has been at any point in their life or loves a man or knows a fucking man.
Has seen a man, is aware of a man.
You know, like, but like, we got fucking problems as men, as masculine people. Like, the fact that we just bottle, the fact that we only are comfortable expressing anger, the fact that, you know, like, we don't know how to love people or accept love.
Well, the acknowledgement of problems being identified and it not being an attack.
Yeah.
I think is absolutely key to the progression of society at this point. Because it's so easy for someone to hear this and go, men have got problems, and go, well, fuck you.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not gonna, like, women, why are you attacking? Too.
I get all that.
Not
shit.
All men and blah, 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 blah. But it's like, well, that's fine, but everyone does. And it's not an insult. It's identifying. Like, when someone told you had a fucked spine, if you had turned around and gone, fuck you, loads of people have got fucked spines. You'd be in a bad situation. But instead you went, oh shit, let's deal with that. Let's try and address that. It's not an attack or an insult. It's a acknowledgement of situations. And look, it's one of the things I like, again, on Twitch, we didn't touch upon, you've done a few reading streams inspired by Llama Chan. Shout out to Llama. Where you've read like Bell Hooks books and kind of, it's been fascinating to go, look, I'm just going to read something that I read and really enjoyed. I hope you enjoy it.
Yeah.
And shit like that is really interesting ways of using a platform that people might not have gone to because they think it's just gaming, but you could stumble upon this. Yeah.
Yeah. I've gotten more comfortable with stuff like that. I was feeling funny about shit like that for a while and was just like, because there were a couple times where if you stream, I mean, I probably streamed the week I got diagnosed. I've streamed for like 4 years. So you're going to stream on some fucking bad days if you do it like that. And I definitely have. Yeah. And I've gone through like a process of thought about that too. And I've kind of come out on the end of like, well, if you want to see the process, like, I'm still not going to show you what it looks like when I'm writing the raps, but I will show you me like reading books about masculinity and thinking about my pain. Like, because that's part of my writing process. Like, I work with fucking emotions and I try and figure out how I'm feeling. I try to really get to the bottom of how I'm feeling. And I think that's actually my job or a big part of my job, which works out because it's also something that'll make you a healthier person, I think. Maybe. But it's just that. It's just like getting to the bottom of how you're feeling can be a hell of a fucking job. And it can take you a lifetime if you've been raised and told, like, stop crying, I will give you a reason to cry. And like, that's on how many of us got socialized. Like, my dad was the toughest guy there is. My grandfather was the toughest guy there is. Like, and then, you know, I bounced out of those situations. I kind of learned a lot of violence and aggression. I was attracted to hip hop music. like hip hop music kind of taught me like capitalism, like grind, hustle, you know, and so that's what I did. And it taught me many other things too, like not to put down rap music, but it's just like the house I came out of, the culture I then came into, a lot of it, and this was specific to the time too. Hip hop is not even like this as much anymore, but like we were hard back then. We were trying to be hard. Like I'm hard. Yeah. Don't fuck with me. Like, and now I'm like, how do I be soft? Like, can I be soft in public? Like, because if you know, like soft feels better, actually. It feels better when your body is soft. I think a lot of us hip hop dudes are like learning to be soft in the second half of our life.
100%. And that learning is a positive thing, and people need to know that. I've got hate before because of exactly what you're talking about. I always remember it. There's a comment somewhere in the reviews on iTunes for this podcast of someone saying, "Nah, fuck Pip. Like, he used to be all about..." Because again, the independent, particularly the independent label mentality is, we can work harder than you.
Yes.
We may not have the budgets, but we can work harder than you.
Yeah.
And I would expose that, and I would talk about that as one of the reasons for some of my successes. Whereas now, as I've grown, I realise that work isn't the most important thing, and rest is really important, and downtime is really important, and we shouldn't be just trying to work harder than everyone else. We should be trying to live better than everyone else and enjoy ourselves and have all of these different things. And I've had people go, "Nah, this is bullshit. You used to say this and now you're saying this." It's like, yeah. Because I've learned.
I was contradicting myself back then. Like, I was telling you, fuck capitalism, but I was working like the biggest capitalist there fucking was.
Yeah.
I was putting my entire identity into my career. Yeah. And like, what's more capitalist than that? Like, now I go outside
and I'm
sometimes.
Still learning. Yeah. I'm still learning on that, 100%. That it's still a learning and evolution. But yeah, it's a mad one. Well, I guess to kind of wrap things up, I feel like I interrupted you on about 3 points that you were making there. So it's too many to go back to and try and dig out. But to wrap things up, or to go to kind of reference everything, how has being an uncle improved you as a person? Because I think it has, and I think you're aware of it and you're conscious of it. Talk to me about it. You talked about your dad bringing you up, being the toughest guy in the room and being the don't cry or I'll give you a reason to cry and that kind of thing. Yeah. And that feels like it's an impetus on, I mean, parts of that are some of the most beautiful songs on the record. Some of the songs that made me cry in a room with you every time you performed it. And stuff like that is... Yeah, that evolution is key to your art, I think. So yeah, just tell me a little bit about that as B. Dolan, the uncle now, I guess.
Yeah. It's been real cool. My conception of like childhood and parents and kids was very bad. And it was something I didn't want to reproduce in my own life. And I also was a part of a lot of kids' lives growing up. I'm kind of the oldest with a bunch of cousins and stuff. And so I had plenty of kids in my life, but I was never trying to be in a position where I was responsible for a kid or a kid was responsible to me. Because I think ultimately it was probably fear of reproducing the relationship with my father and not wanting to become that, but also not having any other template for how to be with a kid. So it's like, well, you know, if you have a kid, then you have to be that. And it's like, I don't want to fucking be that. Like, and I don't even want to be in a house like that. I don't want to be in a house where a family like that is. Like, and so we haven't exactly chosen the degree to which some of our nephews need us. Like some, you know, some life shit has happened in their lives already that has caused me to have to be more active than maybe like just fucking cool uncle who comes around a couple times a year and buys you an Xbox. I'm doing more lifting than that, but it really is like, you know, they're the most beautiful relationships in my life. They, you know, have definitely been hugely instructional to me. And it just in terms of seeing kids at every stage of development, and then being able to compare it to my own childhood. And this is probably obvious to anyone who has a kid, but it's not obvious to anyone who doesn't have a kid, is that you get to see like a 7-year-old and the type of decisions they're making and the type of thoughts they're having. And then you get to think back to yourself at 7 and be like, oh, like you know, I was this, you know, like, because you and your own consciousness have kind of always been you, but only when you look at someone who's like you, but not like you, or related to you, or, you know, can you sort of see it from a third person perspective and be like, you know, I would never hit this kid, you know, or you can see how, or this, I would never hold this kid responsible for doing this bad thing. Things that, you know, I've walked around with guilt for that I now see. It's like, oh, I was a kid, you know, like I didn't understand. So, you know, being around kids is a blessing in that way. And it also adds a degree of urgency to the shit I try and figure out with myself as an adult. It's just like, you see how your undealt with shit can get passed on if you're not regulating it properly. You got to learn. Like, sometimes that's part of why the yoga shit is so important sometimes, is because I got to help these nephews regulate their emotions. And I can't use the way my dad used, you know, I can't be like, stop fucking crying. So, you know, that means we have to go into this whole undiscovered fucking country together. And when the fucking 4-year-old can't stop crying and is hyperventilating, and, you know, I make him just breathe with me. When he's beyond the point of talk or words, we are just breathing together. So that's some brand new shit, that breathing shit. I learned that like 3 months ago, but it goes into immediate use, you know? And it's like, here, man, I'm gonna give it to you when you're 4. Like, and if I had this shit when I was 4, you know? So that's the mission now. Gotta keep my ass alive. Fucking sell these rap records. Teach these kids.
I love it. I love it. I love you. I love The Body Is Not the Wound, which there will be a pre-order link to in the
Wound is not the body. We'll fix it in
the
post.
Wound is not the body.
I love you too. So,
The Wound is not the body. I don't know why I went with The Body Is Not the Wound. That'll be the next record.
Yeah.
It's been a joy, man. It's been a pleasure. And I look forward to all that's ahead. And you're going to be over again, right? Later in the year, you're going to be in the UK and Ireland and all over the place. I don't think dates are locked in as such, but
October.
It's all to come.
October, November. Yeah. I'm coming.
I love it. Beautiful. Well, thank you for taking the time, man. It's always a pleasure.
Thanks for the invite, man.
I also want to give a quick shout to the previous episode we did and to the episode I did with Kaylin of Sports Chair. Wheelchair Sports Camp. I can't say anything at this point. I'm jumbling my shit. But they're both amazing. And I think you talked, I almost brought Kaylin up then earlier on, but I think we talked about Kaylin a lot and the guidance you got there.
Yeah.
But I do think there was a lot of inspiration there when you were figuring out getting back to touring and figuring out what you can do and what's achievable. Yeah. So, but that's a mad episode because Kaylin's a fucking lunatic and I love him for it.
Yeah.
Thank you, man. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, man. This was fun.
And now we'll say all the stuff that we couldn't say on the record. Nice. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to Scroobius Pip's Distraction Pieces.
There we go. That was episode 562 of the Distraction Pieces podcast with B. Dolan. If this is your first time tuning in, go and listen to the other episodes with B. Dolan. There's one with B. Dolan and Sage Francis. There's multiple with Sage Francis. We've had Saul Williams on twice. Who else have we had? We've had loads of indie rap heads. It's an area of expertise. But yeah, have a search. Think of your favourite indie rap type and then enter Distraction Pieces and their name and you'll see what comes up. That's about it for now. Next week, I've got you guys on as the guest because I did an Ask Pip episode. I put up a thing on Instagram asking for your questions. You delivered as ever. We've not done one of them in a year or so. So I figured it was high time. So tune in for that. It's a joy of a conversation. You know, a kind of a conversation. A digital time-lapse conversation. What am I talking about? I'll see you next week. Until then, stay safe and please stay sane. Ta-ta.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.